Welcome back to the Deep Dive. If you are wearing a piece of technology right now, you know, a smartwatch, a fitness tracker, maybe one of those newer medical monitors, you're part of this enormous, invisible, global system.
You're generating a constant torrent of data.
The torrent, exactly.
Yeah.
And that data is absolutely vital for things like human activity recognition or, and this is the big one, early disease detection.
Mm.
Now, we talk a lot about the security risks of uploading personal data, but we rarely touch on the sheer logistical nightmare of it all.
Right.
To train the kind of machine learning models you need for this, you'd usually have to centralize every single person's heart rate, their movement, their sleep data, all onto one giant server.
And that's just not feasible.
Yeah.
It's slow, it's incredibly expensive, and, well, it creates this single massive target for privacy attacks. You can't scale to millions of users if you have to ship petabytes of raw, sensitive data around.
It's a non-starter.
It is, and that inability to centralize is precisely why federated learning, or FL, became such a hot topic.
Okay, let's talk about that.
FL lets models train collaboratively across all these devices, but the raw data never leaves your watch or your phone. It neatly solves that privacy headache.
But there's a catch.
There's always a catch. Even standard FL still relies on a single central server to coordinate everything. It's a bottleneck.
Still a single point of failure.
Exactly. For these huge, sprawling networks of wearables, we're talking thousands of devices with spotty connections and limited batteries, we have to get rid of that central server entirely.
Which brings us to decentralized federated learning, DFL.
Right. A totally peer-to-peer approach. It's way better for fault tolerance, for scalability, but pushing all that training out to the edge creates its own massive challenge.
Which is statistical heterogeneity.
That's it. When these devices try to share updates without a central referee, they often end up, well, poisoning each other's models instead of improving them.
Okay, so let's unpack that central conflict because it's really why we're here. Our mission today is to dive into the Murmura framework.
It's a really fascinating solution.
It seems to be. It tackles this heterogeneity problem head on by giving every device a principled way to answer one question. Is the model from this other device actually compatible with my data?
It's all about quantifying trust.
And by doing that, Murmura is delivering models that are highly personalized, incredibly efficient, and from what I've seen, remarkably stable.
So let's start with that root problem, heterogeneity. At its core, it just means that every device's local data is fundamentally different.
And it's not just that, you know, my activity patterns are different from yours.
No, it's deeper than that. It's a structural problem.
Right.
Of course, you have user diversity, but you also have tiny variations in sensor placement. Do you wear your watch tight on your dominant wrist?
Sure.
I wear mine loose on my non-dominant one. That alone changes the data. Then you have environmental contexts. My model is learning from data gathered indoors, maybe in a cold climate.
Mm.
Yours is learning while you're hiking in the tropics.
All those little differences add up, and that creates this core tension. My smartwatch needs a model that's perfectly tailored to my specific way of walking, my environment, all my little sensor quirks.
That's objective one. Personalization.
Right. But if I train it completely on its own, in isolation, it misses out on all the benefits of collaboration. It never learns the broader patterns.
Like how other people fall, or subtle health indicators that your data alone might not show.
Exactly. So collaboration is essential. But, and this is the key, if I accept an update from a peer whose data is totally incompatible with mine, my local model's accuracy actually goes down. It gets worse.
It gets confused by the conflicting information. And in a fully decentralized setting with no one in charge, this leads directly to what the researchers call the peer compatibility problem.
So each device has to figure out for itself who to talk to.
Autonomously. That's objective two. Selective collaboration. The real trick is telling the difference between, say, harmful dissimilarity, which you want to avoid, and beneficial diversity, which is new complementary knowledge you actually want.
So why don't the simple methods work? I mean, there are other personalized FL approaches out there that use heuristics, right? Like just comparing how far apart the model parameters are.
Because those simple heuristics, things like distance measures or gradient norms, they fail spectacularly in this kind of dynamic environment.
Why? What's the flaw?
They conflate two totally different things: how different the data is and how good the model is.
Okay, give me an example.
All right. Imagine peer A. They have a fantastic, well-trained model, but they trained it on data from, say, professional rock climbing. An activity you never do.
Right.
A simple heuristic looks at the model parameters, sees they're very different from yours, and just screams, too dissimilar. It rejects peer A.
But their model contains high-quality knowledge.
Exactly. Now imagine Peer B. Their data is very similar to yours. They also walk a lot. But they trained their model poorly, or maybe on a very small, noisy data set.
The heuristic would see the similarity and accept it.
It would. And in doing so, it would integrate that low-quality update and actually degrade your model's performance. The heuristics miss the why. They only see surface-level similarity, not the underlying competence.
Okay, so the breakthrough here isn't just a new algorithm, it's a new insight. The devices need to understand why a peer model is making a certain prediction.
Is it confident because it's seen this pattern 1,000 times?
Or is it just guessing because it has no idea what it's looking at? You need to quantify the model's own ignorance to assess compatibility. And standard neural networks, they just can't do that. They only spit out a final prediction.
And that inability to quantify uncertainty is precisely why Murmur is built on evidential deep learning, or EDL.
A completely different approach.
It's a paradigm shift. Instead of just outputting, say, an 80% probability that you're running, an EDL network outputs evidence values.
And these values tell us something deeper.
They do. They parameterize something called a Dirichlet distribution.
Okay, you've got to break that down for us. What does that actually mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So just think of the Dirichlet distribution as a way of modeling how concentrated the model's belief is. If you have a lot of evidence for one class, the distribution is really sharp and tight. The model is very sure.
And if it's not sure?
If the evidence is spread thin, the distribution is wide and flat. The model has very low confidence. It's a mechanism that forces the network to quantify its own ignorance, not just its accuracy.
And that allows you to separate out different kinds of uncertainty.
Two fundamentally different types, yes. And that distinction is the bedrock of the entire framework.
So the first type is the one we're really looking for, epistemic uncertainty.
Which is uncertainty due to a lack of knowledge.
Okay, so it's the model basically saying, I've never seen this before.
Exactly. It's a knowledge gap. If a peer model looks at your local data and shows high epistemic uncertainty, that's a massive red flag for a distributional mismatch. The peer is incompatible because it literally cannot process your data correctly.
So Murmuria uses that score directly to identify and just exclude those incompatible peers.
It does. But then there's the second type.
Aleatoric uncertainty.
Correct. And this captures inherent ambiguity in the data itself. You know, when the sensor readings are just noisy or confusing.
Like when my watch thinks I'm on a light walk, but I'm actually just chopping vegetables really fast for dinner.
That's a perfect example. That messy, ambiguous sensor data creates high aleatoric uncertainty. It's a data quality issue, not a knowledge gap in the model.
So that type of uncertainty should not indicate incompatibility.
Precisely. And EDL allows us to separate these two signals, so we're only filtering based on true knowledge relevance.
So the whole process is actually pretty elegant. My device evaluates a peer's model on my own local data. If that peer model throws up high epistemic uncertainty, my device says nope, assigns a low trust score, and leaves it out of the next training round.
That's the core loop.
But thinking about the devices we're all using, these wearables with tiny batteries, isn't this computationally expensive?
That's a great question, and it's objective four. Resource efficiency. It's actually highly efficient because you compute this evidential uncertainty in a single forward pass. You don't need complex, heavy methods like ensembles or Monte Carlo dropout that would just drain the battery. It's a critical design choice for this to be viable in the real world.
Okay, so we understand the mechanism. How does this look in practice in the aggregation step?
So when a peer's model comes in, your device calculates a compatibility score. This score is basically a function of that peer's accuracy on your local data and its mean epistemic uncertainty.
And there's a penalty.
A severe penalty, yes, if that uncertainty score goes above a certain threshold.
The real genius here, though, seems to be in the adaptive trust thresholds.
Yes.
Because early on in training, every model is uncertain,
yeah,
right? Nobody's learned much yet. If you use a strict filter from the start, you just reject everyone.
And the whole system would just become isolated training. No collaboration at all.
So Murmur starts with lenient thresholds, and they get tighter and tighter as training goes on.
It's a brilliant way to do it. As the models start to get good and specialize on their own data, the system gets pickier about who it trusts.
This ensures collaboration happens when it's most needed early on, but it prevents noise from being injected later when the models have really honed in on their specific users.
And that leads to the final aggregation. Each node makes its own independent decision. Only peers that meet that adaptive threshold get their models aggregated.
And what if no peers pass the test?
Then the node just gracefully degrades to isolated training. It just keeps its own local model for that round. It prioritizes personalization over a forced and potentially harmful consensus.
It's worth pointing out how they tested this. They used something called Dirichlet-based partitioning to basically dial up or down the amount of heterogeneity.
Which let them systematically stress test the system from conditions where data is almost identical to extreme cases where it's wildly different. That control is how we know it really works.
So that's the machinery. But what about the results? When they unleashed this on real-world wearable data, what did it actually find?
The results were, frankly, astonishing, especially on robustness to heterogeneity. This is where you measure how much accuracy you lose when you go from a perfect uniform data world to a really messy disparate one.
And what's the baseline? What does a standard system do?
A standard system like FedAvj suffers a massive 19.3% drop in performance.
That's huge. That's like your fitness tracker working perfectly one day and then being wrong almost 1 out of 5 times the next just because it tried to learn from someone with different biomechanics.
Exactly. But Murma, because of its smart filtering, had only a mass 0.9% degradation across that exact same range.
0.9.
It's a 20x reduction in that performance drop. It's definitive proof that the trust mechanism works. It effectively shields the nodes from harmful updates.
Wow. And what about the actual quality of the final personalized models?
That's the other part. It also excelled at personalization quality. It hit over 95% accuracy on one of the main data sets, even under extreme heterogeneity. But I think more importantly, the variance across all the different devices in the network was significantly lower than other methods.
Meaning the benefits were spread out evenly. It wasn't just a few devices getting great models while others suffered.
The high-quality performance was consistent across the whole network.
Then there's the other big metric, convergence speed, which is maybe the most important thing for the actual user experience.
Right. Murmura converges to its peak accuracy in just 4.0 rounds on average.
Four rounds, and FedAvj.
FedAvj took 29.5 rounds.
So that's a more than a 7x speed up.
It's a 7.4x speed up, and that speed is a direct result of filtering out the noise. By ignoring incompatible updates, the model just learns the useful shared patterns much, much faster.
And for you listening to this, that 7.4x speed up is a direct benefit. It means fewer communication rounds, which means less battery drain and less data usage. For a tiny medical monitor that has to last for weeks, that's not a small thing. That's a fundamental requirement.
Absolutely. And the last piece of the puzzle was hyperparameter stability.
What does that mean in this context?
Well, they tweaked all the settings. How much weight to give accuracy versus trust, how much a node should rely on its own model, and across a really wide range of these settings, the performance was incredibly stable. The standard deviation was often less than 1%.
And that's important because you can't be fine-tuning every single device out there in the real world.
You can't. You need a system that's robust and just works out of the box across different devices and different user environments without a human constantly intervening. This shows that it can.
So if we pull it all together.
The full picture is that Murmura uses this idea of evidential uncertainty, specifically that epistemic lack of knowledge part, as a principled way to select peers. And that leads to personalized, stable models that converge over 7 times faster. It's a complete resource-aware solution.
It really is a compelling framework. But like all frontier research, it seems to open up as many questions as it answers. The researchers did note a limitation on one particularly tricky data set where the user data was so varied that almost no truly compatible peers existed.
Right. In that case, Murmura's conservative approach meant it mostly defaulted to isolated training. It preserved personalization, which is good, but it limited the knowledge sharing.
Which leaves us with a provocative thought for you to chew on. Should future systems like this rely purely on excluding incompatible peers? Or should they explore maybe graduated trust mechanisms?
Where you could extract partial value from moderately compatible peers.
Exactly. Maybe I don't trust your model completely, but I trust it a little bit. How could a system use that information?
And that ties into an even bigger complexity. This stuff isn't static. Your activity changes, your environment changes over time. So how should these systems adapt to the temporal dynamics where a peer that is compatible today might not be tomorrow?
A huge challenge for the next generation of these systems.
It really is.
Well, those are the frontiers this deep dive opens up. We've gone from user diversity all the way to the power of separating epistemic and aleatoric uncertainty to get those incredible 20x robustness gains. The Amor Amuri framework itself is open source, just waiting for those future questions to be explored. Thanks for diving deep with us.